is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, March 20th, opening day for the 2024 season. And today will be better than yesterday because we got to see some regular season baseball on Buster Olney, working from Montana. Sean Bartley's working from California. And we were up early watching the Padres, watching the Dodgers. Really fun.
It was, man. Baseball's back, finally.
Baseball is back. We've been talking about it. We've been talking about the Dodgers lineup and to see it sort of play out. And I've got some observations about the Padres, too, which I really enjoy. You know, seeing that new group together. We have a packed show today. Paul Hembekides will join us to discuss the signing of Blake Snell, the winners and the losers from that. We got a Blue Jays team preview with the great Dan Shulman, a Pirates team preview with Greg Brown. And Carl Ravitch is going to join us from Korea with the Dodgers and Padres just wrapped up the first game of the season with Carl doing play-by-play on ESPN. Of course, we're going to have a second broadcast tomorrow morning. The focus in this game, of course, was Shohei Ohtani after signing that massive $461 million deal with the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he had a good day getting his first hit in the third inning.
2-2, rips one, and he gets on top of it, and Shohei Ohtani's first hit of 2024, a shot into right, a sinker that he turned around at 112 miles an hour.
Xander Bogaerts drove in the first run of the season, though, with a single to give San Diego a 1-0 lead.
Can he turn that around? Here he does. He will drive in the first run of the game as Xander Bogaerts. An RBI to center. That plates Wade, and it's 1-0 San Diego.
The Padres led 2-1 going into the top of the eighth, but the Dodgers rallied for four runs against the San Diego bullpen. The pivotal play was a freak when a ground ball smashed through the glove of first baseman Jay Cronenworth.
He bounces one. That's off the glove of Cronenworth. Rounding and coming in. Teoscar. He will score the go-ahead run.
Right through the webbing.
Oh, my goodness. I've never seen that like that.
Wow.
All right. Some other notes. Since the last podcast taping, Blake Snell, as I mentioned at the top of the show, he signed a two-year, $62 million deal with the San Francisco Giants with an opt-out after year one. There's some deferrals in this deal. So really interesting feedback from people around baseball about this contract. And boy, for a defending Cy Young Award winner to get a two-year contract, that was a shocker for a lot of folks. We've heard all winter about the players' frustration over the way free agency has played out. There was a conference call among player representatives Monday night with some asking Tony Clark, the head of the union, for the ouster Bruce Myers, the union's number two official. We're going to be talking about that with Carl as well. So a lot going on, Sean. What else you got?
Want to tell everybody to check out the College Game Day podcast. You know, we're kicking up for March Madness. So Reese and Pete definitely shared their thoughts on who they thought was going to win, some sleeper teams. So
UConn, back-to-back, baby.
You got UConn winning it?
UConn's winning it. Just write it down because that's what I got in my bracket.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch. Baseball Tonight.
Carl Ravitch is joining us from Seoul, South Korea. Nice job, Carl, on the season opener. What was that like, Padres Dodgers?
Surreal. I mean, just being back in a place that we were sort of living vicariously through during the pandemic and the KBO and in a building that we described and all that was surreal. You know, the game itself was pretty typical of, I think, an early season game, especially the Padres with the usage of their bullpen. Kind of a frustrating loss for them, I'm sure, but encouraging. And I'm telling you, Buster, as I'm walking out of the building, the people that are still waiting to see the Dodgers, and in particular, of course, Shohei Ohtani leave is, you know, it's Beatles-like. It's Tiger Woods in his prime. It's Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. It's unbelievable, this crowd out here waiting, just waiting for a glimpse of Ohtani as he leaves this ballpark.
Yeah, and I've got a lot to ask you about the pressure on the Dodgers, the offense of the Dodgers, and I think we saw the first signs of how relentless it's going to be. To me, the Padres feel different, and you mentioned Ohtani's wife, a star is born. But I got to start with this. I mean, something, having known you, having known Eduardo for so long, you guys had a great segment where Eduardo's going and tasting foods, and the look on his face when he tried the pig liver,
yeah,
like – I mean, you could tell right away, like, oh, my God, he hated it. And I was thinking, I've never seen Eduardo not like some piece of food. Have you ever seen that before?
No, I haven't. He's a remarkably adventurous eater. And generally, his palate will absorb anything. He eats better and more often and with more variety than anybody I've ever met. So I was shocked because there was definitely a level of discomfort in that going down his throat. He did not enjoy it for a second. So no, I, you know, and then you texted us during the game. I've never found any type of food that he didn't like. He didn't like that one. That's for sure.
All right. The Dodgers, I'm sure they began to get that first taste of the pressure that they're going to feel all year. Cause boy, they are the traveling circus show of baseball, and whenever they go to any town, whether it's Seoul or whether it's San Diego, any major league city, they will be the focus of the fans, and they will be expected to win. In baseball, that's pretty impossible. What are you seeing in this? I mean, you just described all the fans waiting for the Dodgers to come out of the building.
Yeah, look, if they win, which I think they're going to do a lot, I think that it takes care of the pressure. If they lost tonight, if they started 1-5, we've seen it with the Yankees the last couple of years, the way they built their teams and struggled. I think it's a different story. I think if you can be the Beatles, so to speak, and leave these ballparks after wins, it makes life really, really, you know, a lot easier. And they got a hell of a top three there with what we saw from Betts and Ohtani and Freddie. And I'll say this. I think that the biggest pressure cooker for this team is on the back of Dave Roberts. I don't think there's any question about it.
No doubt.
I think this idea that Mookie Betts is going to seamlessly fit into shortstop, and I hope he does because we all like Mookie Betts and we think he's capable. But the idea that the Los Angeles Dodgers with their payroll are moving a Gold Glove right fielder who played exceptional second base to shortstop a couple of weeks before the season is crazy. It's not fair, and he may do great, and I hope he does, and I hope it is seamless, but there's a lot more pressure on Dave Roberts to win. When you see the win expectations at 103, you know, this season, it's crazy. So I think it's all on him, to be honest with you. And cause Ohtani's going to perform. He's that good. Like, what's going to prevent him from performing? He's surrounded by better players. He can hit any pitching. What's going to prevent him? I ain't worried about him.
Yeah, and what's weird about it, Carl, is that it, really what happens in the regular season doesn't matter. That real pressure on Dave Roberts is going to start once they get to the postseason because they're going to beat the hell out of teams during the regular season. Their offense is that good. The margin of error is that good. It's almost like they're going to, you know, put on a bunch of circus shows all through the regular season. And then they'll win a bunch of games, and then the real show will begin once you get into the playoffs. It's a weird dynamic when you have a team that is that talented. But man, that lineup, and you could get a feel for this against the Padres today, who I thought actually they're pitching. I think there are a lot of great signs, but eventually that water torture offense they have of great at bat after great at bat after great at bat. That's something we're going to see all year.
No doubt. And I agree with you 100%. And it's going to wear teams down. And their pitching is going to get healthier, which is going to make them more formidable. 100%, Buster. But I think the pressure does rise if they don't win. I agree with you that there's no reason to think they won't during the regular season. But again, you get off to a lousy start. God forbid one of these three great players, especially Ohtani, gets hurt. It changes things. There's a different feel. But this was a typical, I think, Dodger win. They played. It was close. They had, I think, the third most runs in the eighth inning or later last year. And here was a great example of it tonight, trailing 2-1 and winning 5-2. Like The one thing about them, there's never going to be any worry. There's never going to be any panic. They're going to believe that they can come back from any deficit because of the hitters they have, who have proven themselves year after year after year.
What's the snapshot of Ohtani in terms of how he's handling all this attention?
Well, according to Dave, who had, you know, Barry Bonds, he thinks he claims he's never seen anybody handle the daily details that Ohtani does the way he does, which I think in a lot of ways is his turtle shell. Like, he's not going to be distracted because he's so singularly focused on what he's doing as a baseball player. So it doesn't allow for the distractions. Like, literally, like, there's no entry for distractions. And you know the way he was with the Angels last year. I don't think that changes. I don't think there's going to be a whole bunch of appearances. I don't think there's going to be a whole bunch of interviews. I don't think there's going to be commercials. He is singularly focused. And I think that's how he protects himself from any, you know, diversions from the goal, which is to just be a great baseball player and help his team win. I just don't think there's that in him. I don't think he loses his way.
So in this game, a star was born, and that was Shohei Ohtani's wife. My daughter, Sydney, as you know, is in grad school in Japan, and she sent this in. She was excited. She's watching these games, and she sent this in as the formal Japanese pronunciation of Ohtani's wife. Give a listen.
Here is the Japanese version of Ohtani's wife's name. Tanaka Mamiko. Tanaka Mamiko. And here is the U.S. version of Ohtani's wife's name. Mamiko Tanaka. Mamiko Tanaka.
All right. So, Carl, how many times did we show her on our broadcast? Like 10, 15 times? It definitely, as you pointed out, it had that Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce feel.
Yeah, it sure did. And, you know, that, you know, in Asia, they often use the they reverse the names. And, you know, Mamiko Tanaka is how you would say it here in the United States, even though that sounded weird because I'm sitting here in Seoul, which is, they would pronounce it the other way. But, you know, that's how they would
track.
Exactly. That's how they would do it in the United States. And certainly that's how they would do it in Japan and here in South Korea. Yeah, that was that's exactly what it was. And, you know, there's an innocence about her. The way that she celebrated, how she sort of feared for him on that play at first base, which was kind of close. That was authentic. It's real. It's not necessarily having been exposed to this game for a long time. So I thought that was real genuine and you know, in a lot of ways, refreshing. So she's going to be, assuming she goes to the game, she'll be on a lot. I think it's I think it's a little strange that they keep showing Taylor Swift at Travis Kelce's games. I hope we get over showing her that much. But if it appeals to your daughter to see, then that's a way to grow the game. If it's going to cause more eyeballs to be on these games, then I'm not going to be the one to knock it.
All right. Pivotal moment in this game came when a ball broke through the glove of Jake Cronenworth, the Padres first baseman. Really unfortunate for San Diego. It contributed to that Dodgers rally late in the game. They win 5-2. Carl, what are we doing charging Cronenworth with an error, right? I tweeted this out. Like, I mean, if a ball hits a pebble, goes over a third baseman's head, it's a hit. Fly ball lost in the sun, it's a hit. Everyone saw the glove break.
We're falling back on the same old sword. You know, it hit a glove. Therefore, it's an error. Well, it not only hit a glove, it broke through a glove through no fault of the defender. Like, what's the error? Because he didn't punch his glove to make sure it was going to hold the ball. It was traveling, you know, by baseball standards, very slowly. It made no look, that's not an error. He was going to field the ball. He was going to make the play. His glove broke. Wardrobe malfunction. That's what that was. That's not an error. You want to put WM for the score? Do that. But that wasn't an error on Jay Cronenworth.
No, I agree. I feel like from afar that the Padres just have a different feel about them this year. They're more scrappy, more esprit de corps, but you're there. Tell me what you're seeing in those guys.
I think there's some of that. And look, I think through the course of the spring, when you trade Soto and you get a big package back, and, you know, Michael King may end up being the best starting pitcher on this staff, you can kind of justify it. But, you know, as a fan, like, well, yeah, but we also just traded Juan Soto. So we're not necessarily in the window of we're trying to win and we're keeping Soto and we're making a trade and we're signing somebody else. They're not doing that. But when they went out and got Dylan Cease, it kind of reminded to me, and I think I was told this by several of them, it reminded them like, oh, wait a minute, like we're not going away. You know, we now have a staff that has Darvish on it, and it has Cease who can lead it, and it has King on it, and the bullpen, the lefties are really good. Like I think AJ Preller kind of reminded everybody, I got to shuffle the deck a little bit. But once I do, I'm still in the go mode. You know, it's green light here. It's not red. So I think I agree with you, and I think that most people who were in and around baseball last year looked at some of the dysfunctionality of the Padres, and I'm not suggesting that Soto was the cause of it, in the middle of it, but I do think there's a fresh look on what they can accomplish. They got a new manager there. I agree with what you're saying. I think the players agree with it. But again, these types of losses tonight, Buster, you know, that's demoralizing because in a lot of ways it was similar to last year in their one-run games when they were 9-23. You know, they had this game and they didn't close the deal.
No, and look, you lose Juan Soto out of your lineup, it's going to hurt your run production. That's going to be their big challenge, I think, during the year. Well, you guys are the big story in baseball, but underneath that, man, Carl, so much conversation over here about this conference call that took place with the Players Association the other night, where some players are calling for the ouster Bruce Meyer, who is the number one official underneath Tony Clark, the head of the union. Harry Marino, who's a driving force in unionizing minor league players, a group of players who support him are challenging baseball's leadership, the union leadership. And I must tell you, the first thing I thought of when I saw all this, and Jack Flaherty yesterday, who's a player rep who supports the ouster of Meyer, he spoke to reporters and he essentially said in so many words, look, we're looking for ways for more players to get more money. Carl, for the first time, I think baseball is taking a step potentially toward a salary cap system. When you have players upset that this system is, in their eyes, being protected, and it's a system that rewards guys at the very top, and a lot of the middle class among players really unhappy with what's going on, this is major news within baseball. What's your take?
You know, I would agree. And look, I think at first when I saw it, I wasn't sure who was behind it. What the end game was it trying to get rid of Meyer? Was it trying to get rid of Meyer and Clark? And the more I spoke to players and former players over here, you know, this idea that has also been fronted that Scott Boras is involved in a way, kind of back channeling, running the union. They were very, I'll be honest, they were very dismissive of that. But they also suggested if that is the case, then we do have a real problem. So That's the conversations that I was having. Nobody had any particularly cogent answer to that and to what the end game was. But I will say that the salary cap concept, as opposed to just maybe protecting the top players that get paid, is a way to help protect and increase the income for those guys that aren't getting those humongous dollars. And the disparity is real. And, you know, I don't think anybody who's part of a union wants disparity. What they do want, though, is higher wages. And to his credit, that's what the higher salaries have been able to do in years past. Whether that's going to continue or can be changed, the time will tell. But again, those were the conversations I had with the players, sort of where there's smoke, there's fire, et cetera, type stuff.
Yeah, and the way that this would happen, you remember that months before the most recent CBA was negotiated, Major League Baseball floated the idea of having a salary cap type system with a floor for teams and requiring a minimum spending. They floated that to the union, and it was rejected outright based on principle, with the union saying, no, we'd never agree to that. And I can tell you, I've spoken with so many players like, wait a second, if that leads to more players getting more money, why aren't we at least exploring the idea? And so now you have a situation where Harry Marino, who has a huge base of support because he has all these minor leaguers who are now have a vote in this behind him. I think that's the, you know, the conversation is going to be had as we move forward. And it will be interesting to see how Tony Clark responds to all this, because he certainly comes out looking weak when you have players saying, look, we want to change. And you know, the initial response was no. Maybe that's going to change. The feeling I know among some agents I spoke to is that, look, if Bruce Meyer goes, the number two official in the union, Tony Clark inevitably will follow. So it's huge news here. Before you go, tell me what you thought about Blake Snell's deal with the San Francisco Giants, a big come down from the $150 million that the Yankees offered him in the wintertime.
I think it was a huge deal because he still got $31 million. And I think the thing that we're seeing with all of these deals, Buster, are they're one-year opt-outs. I mean, every deal that's signed right now has a one-year opt-out. This is Charles O'Finley's idea of having one-year contracts. Is it a big comeback, come down? Yeah. Is it $31 million a year? Yeah. So I'm sorry. I understand the expectations. I don't think there's an effort to screw these players. I just don't. I'm sorry. $31 million is a whole bunch of money. And if you get $31 million and you have an unbelievable season, and he did last year, well, that's what the market's telling you about the opinion on Blake Snell. That's it. So I don't look at it like it's a huge come down. I don't look at it like it's a tragedy and a disaster and a failed effort by the agent. It's $31 million. I'm sorry. That's my take on it.
All right, Carl. Well, again, nice job tonight, and I look forward to tomorrow morning.
Thank you, Buster. We'll see you in the morning, buddy.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code baseball. That's code baseball. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Jumping into the numbers. Numbers. This is Himbo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Paul Imbakides is the highest paid researcher in the history of the world. Himbo, how you doing?
Buster, I'm looking at my clock right now. It says 12:17 on the East Coast, which means 18 hours from now, I'll be watching a real baseball game that actually counts towards the standings with real people potentially wearing see-through pants. I can honestly tell you that I am so freaking excited for the start of the season. It's just like a little taste just to whet my appetite for what is obviously going to be a super exciting season. And the fact that we get to see the Dodgers and the Padres overseas, given all that the Dodgers went through over the course of the winter, is about as big a thrill as you could possibly expect or ask for. I'm going to be working with our friend Jess Mendoza on Get Up, doing TV segments coming out of that game. And so as you might expect, we are armed and dangerous and ready for the start of the season.
You know, and it's funny, the expectations on this team are so high that I was joking about this, not really joking, but I was reminiscing with David Cohn about the expectation for the 98 Yankees, who went on to win 125 games. They started the season, I think, 1-3 or 0-3, and you had folks like myself writing the question of whether or not Joe Torre was going to be fired, right? That's because it's the Dodgers are in that situation where if they flounder early, boy, that's going to dominate conversation. So that it's going to be a lot of fun. And I've got some questions about this season coming up. But before we get to that, we get the big news overnight that Blake Snell has finally signed a 2-year deal with the San Francisco Giants that has an opt out after year one. I got to say, in the end, man, what a loss for a guy who's the reigning National League Cy Young Award winner. Before, you know, I ask you about that, though, I want to just generally speaking, you know, you're higher on the Giants than a lot of people are. Tell me what this does for you in terms of the Giants making or not making the playoffs.
This, in my judgment, solidifies the Giants not only as a playoff team in the National League, but as I look up and down the roster, every single team in the National League, the only ones that I can right now definitively say are better than the Giants are the obvious ones: the Dodgers, the Braves, and the Phillies. I believe the Giants are then at the very top of the very next tier. That is a tier that could include Chicago, it could include Cincinnati, it most definitely could include the reigning National League champion Arizona Diamondbacks, perhaps even the San Diego Padres now that they're newly minted with Dylan Cease. But I have a hard time imagining a National League playoff field that does not include a Giants team that just had an offseason for the ages. Buster, this team got so much better in so many different ways. They have basically turned over half of their lineup, and in my judgment, they have done so for the better. They have replaced 40% of their starting rotation, and as we've discussed, with Robbie Ray and Alex Cobb potentially as reinforcements in the second half of the season, and what I think will be a fairly weakened division, I really do, that is a team that is armed and dangerous. I think that's a team that could touch 90 wins, and I was high on this club before they even signed Chapman or they signed Snell. So when the facts change, I change my mind, and what the facts now say to me is that the Giants are a 90-win baseball team. What say you?
Given the history of players and how they performed after signing very late in spring training, this is a late spring training signing. Does that concern you?
Most definitely. And it especially concerns me given Blake Snell's propensity to start his seasons slowly. If you check out Blake Snell's career splits, just very like basic dumb guy stats type stuff, he's got an ERA that's 1.3 runs better in the second half after the All-Star break than it is in the first. It's like the difference between like 3.8 and 2.5, which is obviously a pretty sizable gap. He won the Cy Young last year in large part because he finished the season so strongly. That doesn't necessarily mean that's, you know, he's going to run that same play, but I think it's overwhelmingly likely that Blake Snell is going to be better on August 1st than he is on April 1st. I don't think that's hyperbole to say in any stretch of the imagination. And so the fact that there is an opt-out is a little concerning if I'm the Giants, because I might get half a good year. The market might be more robust next year, and it might have paid him $31 million to give me 10 or 12 good starts. But even so, that's a club that has seen him a lot, thus knows him a lot, pitching in a pitcher-friendly ballpark with a pretty decent defense behind him on a team that I expect to be live, very live when it comes to the playoff picture. So yes, it does concern me, but there is no such thing as a bad one-year contract, which this effectively is for the San Francisco Giants. I think the Giants are made better by Blake Snell, even if they only give him a great second half of the season.
Well, and they were in a better position to do it because they'd already signed Matt Chapman. So draft pick compensation, that whole thing was not an issue for them.
Good call.
I will tell you that there was an executive with another team who told me that his team was out on. He said, look, with Blake Snell, and he said exactly what you said, he is a historically slow starter. And so now it's probably going to take him an extra 2 weeks to ramp up. So in the end, you're talking about, you know, 2 good months and you're going to pay him $30 million. And this guy was like, I don't buy it. I don't think it's a good deal. I was, you know, talked to you before about the Cody Bellinger contract. I actually thought that was a good contract. Like people in the industry who painted Scott Boras as a big loser on that deal, I disagreed. Like given Cody Bellinger's up and down the recent years, I thought it was an excellent contract. This is nothing but a huge loss for Scott. And there's no way around that, knowing that the Yankees are willing to pay him $150 million. That a guy who is a reigning Cy Young Award winner was auditioning for scouts over the weekend. I tweeted out about this yesterday and said, this is like Tom Cruise being asked to audition for community theater. What are we doing? He just had a career year and he's auditioning for scouts. What are you kidding me? This was a terrible deal. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's hard to disagree. The Cody Bellinger contract was Scott Boras losing by decision. The Blake Snell contract is Scott Boras getting knocked out clean. You know, he is being resuscitated by the men in his corner as they're wiping down his brow with a cold washcloth. In all seriousness, I don't actually think that Scott Boras has lost his fastball per se. I don't think he's getting worse. I just think that GMs around baseball are so much better. They're so much smarter. They're so much better at making decisions using data, using discipline, and they're much better at convincing their owners who used to have the ear of Scott Boras that their data is more reliable than the Scott Boras sales pitch. So Lord knows that, you know, Scott doesn't need to take advice from me. But what I would say, if he were listening or if he were to ask, I would say you need a lot more forward-facing, predictive, analytical information in these sales pitches, and a lot less, here's how many Cy Youngs this guy won, or how many MVP finishes this guy used to have, because that's the kind of thing that fans care about. kind of thing that owners used to care about. It's most definitely not the kind of thing that GMs care about. And look, I have to admit, I've not been in these rooms. I've not been in these meetings. And I'm sure Scott employs really smart people that crunch these numbers for them. But even so, there's a disconnect between what a good player is worth and what a player is supposed to get. He's asking to give good players great player money. And I'm not convinced, Buster, that if your sticker price is what your sticker price is in the case of Bellinger or in the case of Snell, that you're not going to scare off teams at the beginning of the offseason and say to themselves, okay, we're just going to shop at a different dealership. So I think he needs to be more forward-facing in the information that he's selling to teams, and he needs to enter the offseason a little bit less like a lion and a little bit more like a lamb.
Yeah, and I think he's, you know, my feeling is this winter he had a bad read on where the market was on some players. You know, because I'm talking to executives as he is, but what I'm hearing from executives is, well, you know what? Matt Chapman had a great April, but he really struggled the rest of the way. And that was a big concern. And why, you know, so much swing and miss. Why did he struggle against high velocity? And that would take it down. And that's a player, by the way, who turned down about $125 million, from what I understand, from the Blue Jays last April. Okay. And he winds up getting a $50 million deal. Jordan Montgomery, a respected left-hander, but clearly, you know, what teams are saying to me is that he was looking for more like Aaron Nola money and, you know, $175 million type deal. Now agents who don't represent him are telling me that they think that he's going to be fortunate to get a Taiwan Walker deal, which is like 4x18, because they're just not a lot of teams out there. I do think the Red Sox would be interested in signing him if the asking price comes down. And I get it that, you know, this whole mentality about getting most money in an annual basis. You know what? There are times, like with Blake Snell, you're coming off a great year. It's better to take the biggest pile of money. That's what he did with Bryce Harper, right? The way the structure was in the end, it was more about the total value of the deal. And I think that's what he should have done with Blake Snell.
Yeah, absolutely. Ask Michael Conforto if he should have gone year to year. Ask Ryan Madsen back in the day if he should have gone year to year. This is nothing new. Like history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. And there is an extraordinary value in the market from the very beginning and asking myself, what is reasonable between the 20-yard line? If you enter an offseason and you're saying, I'm trying to get a number two starter in Jordan Montgomery, $200 million or something to that effect, then you're going to blow through every team that has the money to spend on Jordan Montgomery because they're going to laugh you out of the room and go somewhere else. The other thing, Buster, as you well know, that GMs prioritize now to the nth degree is the draft pick compensation. We know that draft picks have been historically criminally underpaid in relation to the potential value that they are providing organizations. So if I'm Scott Boras, Scott, in my sales pitch, to these teams, I'm going to tell you why there's cost certainty with my client, and that's a lot more valuable than the hypothetical draft pick that may or may not yield big league value down the line. There are so many attributes of these decisions that general managers are considering. And when the super agent comes in and asks for the huge amount of money, the huge sticker price, it's really easy to deviate when you're not talking about actual premium, actual top of the food chain, actual very top of the hierarchy.
Right.
Players. And these players were merely not that.
No, there needs to be a connection between what you're asking for and how the industry perceives the player. And it's clear with Blake Snell that teams did not perceive him as being a $200 million plus guy. You know, they perceived him to be more like Tyler Glasnow. Yeah, there's some really good stuff there. He's left-handed. He's had a couple of great years, but there's also some stuff that we worry about, which is why I think that, you know, that offer that the Yankees made and maybe other teams are working in the same area would have been much better. And you wonder if he's ever going to see that money again at the end of these 2 years. We'll just have to see. All right. This week, of course, it's bracket madness. That is the dominating the conversation. My son is looking to humiliate me. I finished my bracket today. I'm quite worried about it. But you want to work off of that theme of the bracket madness. So I'm going to give you a question. Give me that we often hear when we're talking about the NCAA tournament. Give me your Cinderella team in Major League Baseball for 2024.
My Cinderella team, Cincinnati Reds. Now, in order for me to land upon this team, I asked myself, okay, I'm not going to pick a team that's projected to finish first or second in their division and a team in the bottom half of the payroll league-wide. Now, my Reds win total for you this year is 81, as you know. But I'm going to tell you why I think this team could absolutely exceed that my expectation for them and hit the high end of variance. I'm going to give you three reasons for it. Number one, I expect better stamina, heart of their order. Here's what I mean. So Cruz, Steer, and Fraley, they're projected 2, 3, and 4 hitters. Last year before the All-Star break, had an 850 combined OPS. After, it was 701, a 149 percentage point decrease. We see that all the time with young players. I expect they'll be able to sustain over 162 better this year. Secondly, I expect better infield defense. They were the only club in the National League this year that were negative at all four infield positions. Only 72% of their ground balls were converted into outs, the lowest rate in the National League. So you might ask, how are they going to be better in that area? Well, Jonathan India was basically unplayable, right? He's now they're going to be their designated hitter, and they have a lot more defined roles in their infield, and at least Candelario can fake it at third base. And number three, I expect reinforcements, Buster, to improve their rotation throughout the season. Both Rhett Lauder and Connor Phillips are top 100 prospects with a 2024 ETA. You know, I'm really, really high on this. Where are you going to add value during the season on the cheap? The Red Sox have the ability to add those reinforcements throughout the season, plug those guys into a staff that now includes Frankie Montas, now includes Nick Martinez. I think you can dream up a scenario in which the Cincinnati Reds sniff 90 wins and win the National League Central.
And it is the National League Central. I think that's a really important fact when you think about who might upset. The bar is not high in that division. All right, Blue Blood on an upset alert. What you got?
The mighty New York Yankees, Buster. Right now,
I knew you were going to go there.
Oh, you know me. Yankee hater. Right now, they're plus 450 to win the American League. Only the Astros have shorter odds. I feel that this team has been overvalued in the marketplace and is one that is likelier to miss the playoffs entirely than to win the pennant. Their doomsday scenario is pretty straightforward. It obviously starts with Gerrit Cole not returning expediently or effectively. Keep in mind, last season, the Yankees went 23-10 in games in which he started. They went 59-70 with a minus 70 run differential in all other games. Now, I think the lineup is a lot better than it was last year. I'm not sure the pitching staff is better. The second part of this doomsday scenario, of course, is one in which DJ LeMahieu, Anthony Rizzo, and Giancarlo Stanton, all ancient hitters that are super important in the functionality of that lineup, not bouncing back, not finding the fountain of youth. When three of your top six hitters are not only that old, but I think also that prone to continued regression because of health issues they've had and just deteriorated skills, the Yankees have become a super top-heavy team. And if Aaron Judge and Juan Soto don't just absolutely blow past like every expectation that you might have for them, I could dream up a scenario in which the Yankees finish at the bottom of their division again and all hell breaks loose in the Bronx.
It's really interesting. You know, I've asked folks with other teams who don't have access to Gerrit Cole's medical information, but they've seen this play out and they know about, you know, how about treatments and how players are dealt with and the language of these situations. And every person I've asked said, oh, he's headed to Tommy John surgery. Like there's no doubt in their mind. Okay. And again, they haven't looked at a medical report, but they know the trajectory of pitchers with these situations. So boy, as you say, that'd be absolutely devastating. All right. Give me a diaper dandy among pitchers.
I'm giving you Paul Skeens. I think Paul Skeens is going to have a magnificent season. I just want to remind people how unbelievable he was last year in college. In the best conference in America, he threw 122 innings. In those 122 innings, it was 209 strikeouts against 20 walks, and he allowed 72 hits. Paul Skeens was a video game in college and a pitcher that I think could have a Steven Strasburg-like impact on the Pirates as soon as this season. You recall, Strasburg started 11 games in the minors the year after he was drafted before it basically became apparent that they couldn't wait any longer for him in Washington. My expectation is that Skeens has a pretty similar trajectory, one in which if he's still sitting in the minor leagues in May, everyone and their mother is going to be yelling for him to pitch in the big leagues, and for good reason. I think he shoves in the big leagues and he does it right away.
I'm going to be talking with Greg Brown, who does play-by-play for the Pittsburgh Pirates coming up, and we'll be talking about Paul Skeens and how quickly he could be promoted. Give me a diaper dandy among position players.
Buster, what I'm going to do, read for you, Wyatt Langford's OPS,
yeah,
by level, played. I'm going to say them, and then you're going to be amazed. 34 Division I baseball games, his OPS was 1217. In three games in rookie ball, it was 1275. In 24 high A games, it was 1097. In 12 double A games, it was 1280. In five triple A games, it was 1065. And of course, in 16 spring training games, it is 1198. He has had an OPS north of 1,000 at every level since high school. And he probably had an OPS way north of 1,000 in high school too. By the way, he's hitting 3 or 4 in spring training for a team that had the best lineup in the American League last season. So you're asking me for a comp. I'll give you Ryan Braun. I think he could have a Ryan Braun type impact right away. You recall Braun was an absolute masher in college at Miami, mashed his way through the minor leagues, and was so advanced as a hitter coming out of college that basically by the time he was ready for the big leagues, of course, in air quotes, he immediately was like one of the dozen or so best hitters on the planet. I don't know that Wyatt Langford has that in his bag, but I see one of the very best hitters in baseball in short order. And if you're going to tell me you plug him into the middle of that lineup right now, we're talking about a premium talent who's going to win the American League Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, he presents a quite a quandary for the Rangers. As you know, the refrain often from front offices is about prospects coming up through minor leagues is, well, you know, we want to see them have some extended failure. And this is serious. And they're not rooting against the player, but they're saying extended failure so they can learn how to dig out of slumps and that sort of thing. It's impossible. He's never had extended failure. Your numbers are dead on with that, right? They reflect that, you know? So maybe extended failure for him is like an 0 for 4.
960 OPS.
right, exactly. All right, Hembo, thanks for doing this.
Later, friends.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 Team Preview, Toronto Blue Jays, machinations.
The Blue Jays offense underperformed last season, finishing 14th of 30 teams in runs scored, and Toronto took a run at Shohei Ohtani in the offseason, among others. But in the end, the Jays lineup is very similar to last year's. Toronto did sign Justin Turner to a one-year, $13 million deal, infielder Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, DH candidate Daniel Vogelbach, and Joey Votto.
A guy to watch.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who had his lowest OPS since his rookie year and hit 26 homers in 156 games last year, looks like a different player this spring. He seemed to reinvest in himself during the offseason, improving his conditioning, and he's looked good in spring training and could be poised for a big year.
The foundation.
The Toronto rotation drove the Jays to the playoffs last season and could lead the way again. Kevin Gausman, Jose Barrios, Chris Bassett, Yusei Kikuchi. Alec Manoah is in better shape this spring, but soreness early in camp has put him behind. And late in camp, it appears that Bowden Francis, who thrived in 20 outings in relief last season, posting a 1.73 ERA, is leading the competition for the number 5 spot. There are late spring injury concerns in the bullpen, however, with Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson.
Win projection.
Pecota projects the Jays for 87.9 wins. Hembo is seemingly down on the Jays, pegging them for 83. Sarah Langs is more optimistic, says 89. I've got them at 88. Dan Shulman is the play-by-play man for the Toronto Blue Jays on television. And, of course, for years and years and years, I got to work with him on Sunday Night Baseball. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Buster. It's great to see you. How are things?
I'm doing great. I'm back in Montana. You, on the other hand, are in sunny Dunedin. I know you absolutely love it.
How can you tell it's sunny? The glare off my head right now? Yeah, it's a little bit sunny.
I'm not sure. I'm curious in your perspective on this because you're much closer to the Blue Jays than I am. about what kind of projections we're going to see this year. If there is optimism, it feels like it's built on what we've seen out of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. showing up in camp and how he seemed to be reinvested.
It's interesting. I think if you asked a certain segment of the Blue Jays fan population, they would say, well, they didn't hit great last year and they lost this guy and that guy and they tried for Ohtani, but they didn't get him. And so I think in one corner of the fan base, there's pessimism actually about where's the offense going to come from. I think internally, and we all understand it's spring training and everybody kind of skews to the optimistic end of the scale internally. But I think internally they're very, very encouraged by what they have seen from Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Alejandro Kirk, George Springer, and Dalton Varsho. There's so much talk every year about, did you win the winter? What did you do in the winter? And I think the Blue Jay, well, they love Justin Turner. You know, getting Justin Turner obviously is a big thing for them. But I think they are confident that they're going to get more out of those four guys. And those are, you know, right now, they're 1, 3, 5, and 6 hitters in their lineup. They're really important guys. If Vladdy is the best version of himself, he's an MVP candidate. And that is a huge swing for the Blue Jays offense. He looks great. He's in good condition. He's, you know, hitting the char out of the ball here in the spring. So we will see. But the overall projections for this team, I think, are lower than they've been the last few years. And I think they might sneak up on some people and be pretty good.
So you mentioned some of the other guys about Vladdy. We read a lot about how he was in better condition. Tell me about George Springer, who I think because of Vladdy's struggles, George Springer, for lack of a better way to describe it, got a little bit of pass last year, not as much focus on him. Tell me what he's been working on.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think his OPS plus was like 102, so he was just a little bit above average. And we all know George Springer is better than a little bit above average. You know, he's also getting, I think he's 34 now, getting into his mid-30s. And so when you see a decline, there's a certain, you know, well, what is this right now? But he's looked great. They're really preaching here swing decisions and pitch recognition and things like that. Swing at what you can handle, lay off what you can't. And I think Springer's one of the guys who has done that. And he's shown power here in the spring. And that's what they need. They need more power. I think last year Guerrero, I'm going to get some of this wrong, but I think last year Guerrero hit 26 home runs. Springer hit 21 home runs. You know, I think there's room for growth for both of those guys, as we have seen from them in the past. But George is healthy right now. He played Buster. I think he appeared in 154 games last year and started 148. And I think ideally they'd like to give him just a little bit more of a break, lower those numbers just a little bit. That maybe, you know, the best 140 will give you the best out of George Springer. So right now he's going to hit leadoff. They're kind of flip-flopping Bichette and Guerrero 2-3, and then Justin Turner's 4 right now. Those will be their top four hitters in some order, 100%. And yes, they're all righties, but they didn't go out and get that left-handed bat. You know, you get Juan Soto, you're going to hit him in the 2 spot, and you're going to, you know, stick that lefty at the top of the order. They'll be all right-handed 1 through 4. Their lefties right now look like they hit 5, 7, and 9, Varsho, Kiermaier, Biggio. And we'll see. I just spent about an hour on the field, and everybody's in a good place. And I don't mean like best shape of my life kind of thing. I mean, you know, Don Mattingly is the offensive coordinator for the team now, and they have a total of 4 hitting coaches on this team. And from all the players I talked to, they wish the season could start tomorrow.
Well, you probably know the answer to this. I didn't plan on asking you this, but you just mentioned you talked to Don Mattingly. I can't tell you how many people have come up to me and say, what's his story with the beard? What's the story with the beard?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I've been bouncing between basketball and baseball. I just got back today, and today's the first day I saw Donnie. Don Mattingly and Pete Walker, they've got an incredible first step. Like, you got to grab them, or they're busy going somewhere else to work at dinner. Or a pitcher. So I didn't ask him about the beard. I promise you I will do that for next time. I should have done that today. But, you know, for a young hitter, how cool is it having Don Mattingly? And so offensive coordinator, basically he's in charge of everything to do with hitting. They've got 3 other hitting instructors in Guillermo Martinez, Hunter Mentz, and Matt Haig. The messaging is all consistent. And, you know, and then Donnie goes out and he plays first base when they're doing infield drills. It was Mattingly and Guerrero and Turner, who were kind of all alternating at first base, depending on who was hitting and what else everybody was doing. I mean, I think if I were a 23-year-old minor leaguer, a guy trying to break into the big leagues, Don Mattingly's taking ground balls and Don Mattingly's talking to me about hitting, I think I would find that pretty cool.
Obviously, Dalton Varsho bouncing back is big, not only because he was a key trade piece, but he's one of the few left-handed hitters in the lineup. What's the focus been for him this spring?
So, first of all, I think he's in a much better place mentally than he was last year. And I'm not going to tell you anything now you don't already know. The first time you get traded as a player can be a difficult situation. He got traded to a team last year that gave up a very popular player in Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and a very highly thought of prospect at the time in Gabriel Moreno, who now is a big leaguer, full-time big leaguer. And because Brandon Belt last year was coming off knee surgery and wasn't ready to get, you know, really ready to go right at the beginning, they put Varsho in the cleanup spot. So replace a popular guy and a top prospect, balance our lineup, hit cleanup, and help lead us to the World Series. That's a lot. And he felt it. And he's admitted to that. You know, he didn't know very many people here. Now he knows everybody. He is as popular a guy in that clubhouse as anybody. I don't know if you've ever met him. You're not going to meet a better guy. And I think just mentally, Buster, he's in so much of a better place. He's relaxed. Everybody knows how hard he plays defensively and the base running. They're both elite, super popular, as I mentioned. His focus in the batter's box, he's opened up his stance a bit. And his focus is, like a lot of the guys, don't swing at what I can't hit. And then just put a good swing on the ball. Just try to hit a hard line drive somewhere. He popped up a ton of pitches last year. And he thinks he was trying to hit home runs and maybe was getting, you know, the uppercut was going a little bit too much. He's just going to try to hit the ball hard. He's got power. He hit, I think, 27 home runs 2 years ago for the Diamondbacks. And even in an off year last year, he hit 20 for the Blue Jays. He hit 220 with 20 home runs. If he hits 250 with 27 home runs with his base running, his defense, and he's also taken a lot of walks, much, much more selective so far here in the spring. And the Blue Jays, they're not preaching take walks. They're preaching take the stuff you can't hit, get in a good count, and then do damage when the pitcher has to come to you. And if he walks you, he walks you. But a big mantra of the on the offensive side is don't chase what you can't hit, get in a good count, and then do some damage.
As you know, the foundation of the Blue Jays is seen to be their rotation. But late in spring, they're having all these injuries come up in their bullpen. What's the situation there?
So we just found out this morning, and hopefully both are minor. They were both told to us as if they are minor. Eric Swanson, very key 7th, 8th inning guy for the Blue Jays. Tightness in his forearm. They did an MRI. No structural damage. They're just calling it a reset. Give him a couple of days off and then see where he's at. Jordan Romano, their all-star closer, felt he didn't bounce back after his last outing. It's his elbow. Did an MRI, no structural damage, received an anti-inflammatory injection. That's all we know right now. If it's best case scenario, maybe they're both back on a mound in 3 or 4 days. If it's not best case scenario, then their depth is going to be tested. And they've got guys like Nate Pearson and Zach Pop, who, if everybody's healthy, don't project to make the team, in my opinion, on an opening day, but, you know, maybe pressed into service. I think one thing they've done is they've got better pitching depth ready to help out than they've had the last couple of years. And it's bitten them in the rear end a few times in the last couple of years. I think they've got better depth right now, and that'll be tested. They've also got Kevin Gausman, who's behind, and he's obviously their ace. He felt he didn't bounce back, shoulder fatigue. He's supposed to throw a couple of innings of a simulated game tomorrow. Whether or not he is on the roster to begin the season, we don't know for sure yet, but they did announce today that Jose Berríos will be the opening day starter.
Two wild cards for them, it feels like at this point. Alek Manoah, Joey Votto, who's been a fun story to follow. Yeah. Sort of what's the latest on those two guys and how they're seen?
Alek Manoah was scheduled to throw a side about an hour ago at the Player Development Complex. Don't know the results of that, but it's good at least that he was scheduled to get on a mound. He had a little bit of shoulder soreness. He will not break camp with the team. Bowden Francis is a name to keep an eye on. He impressed last year in kind of a middle relief multi-inning role, and he's going to be pressed into service in the rotation in the early going. And I think Manoah will have to fight his way back to the team. He'll start the year on the IL, and then whether it's here in Dunedin or in Buffalo, you know, he'll make some starts and obviously have to show that he's healthy, get his pitch count up, and then be effective. They'd love to have him back. I mean, 2 years ago, he was a Cy Young finalist. We're not talking about ancient history or anything. So they'd love to have him back. But Bowden Francis has been one of the most impressive guys in the spring. Joey Votto is 1-for-1 with a home run. So he's having a perfect spring so far. But then, as you know, your viewers and listeners may not know all as much. Then he went back in the dugout and stepped on a bat and rolled his ankle. So he's day to day. He was supposed to get 3 at bats and he only got 1 and hit a home run, a disputed home run, I guess. But even if it was a double, he hit it hard. And I think they're giving him a very serious look. I don't think this is, hey, let's sign the Canadian guy. It's a feel good story. The Blue Jays aren't in that place right now. They're in a place where they have to make the playoffs and have to get deeper than they've gotten, have to win some games in the playoffs. And maybe this is an oversimplification, but they've also got Daniel Vogel back. And maybe it comes down to Votto and Vogel back as that left-handed threat off the bench, a guy who could start and DH some, in Votto's case, could play some first, but, you know, also be a threat off the bench. If Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is up late in the game or Ernie Clement is up late in the game and they, you know, a righty's on the mound and they want somebody to come off the bench, we'll see what Votto has left. He's 40, but as you know, you're the one who broke the story. He said he's healthier. He feels great. And he is willing to do whatever they want him to do. He's willing to get at bats anywhere, go to any minor league affiliate, and just try to work his way back to the big leagues. So the attitude is good. It'll all come down to what the bat looks like.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to play out, but I do hope that he winds up playing some home games in Toronto. That would be a fun first plate appearance for sure. 30 seconds. Give me where you see the Blue Jays in divisional context as we get ready to go.
Well, I'm looking at the Baltimore Orioles taking BP right now here in Dunedin. They're the opponent today. Their lineup is frightening. You know, I'm sure you would agree with me. Jackson Holliday looks like a potentially generational talent. They're adding him. They've added Corbin Burns. They're really, really good. The Yankees are, in my opinion, are really, really good, although they've got some injury concerns. I think the Blue Jays are being slept on a little bit. I think a lot of people are probably picking them for fourth. This division's a monster. It is every single year. I could see the Blue Jays winning 82 games. I could see them winning 94 games, really. It gets back to Vladdy, and is Gausman healthy? Romano okay? They have to have some things break right. But if things break right, I don't think there's any question that this can be a very dangerous team, a playoff team, and I think a team that surprises people.
Dan, thanks for doing this, and I'm mostly relieved that I didn't have to track any narration in your presence. I've told that story 1,000 times. Thank you.
I used to love that when Buster would sit down beside me the next set and have to read a tease or something. And I'd just be sitting there minding my own business, but he would say, man, I hate doing this beside you. But it's always great to see you. I wish we saw each other face to face more, but great to catch up. And I hope everything is well in your world.
Thank you, sir.
Baseball Tonight, 2024 team preview, Pittsburgh Pirates, machinations.
Like the Reds and the Tigers, the Pirates were more active in the offseason than expected. They traded for Marco Gonzalez and signed Martin Perez for their rotation. They added longtime closer Aroldis Chapman to their bullpen. They picked up Rowdy Tellez for first base and Michael A. Taylor for the outfield. And they re-signed Andrew McCutchen.
A guy to watch.
Paul Skeens was the first pick in last year's draft. And since then, he's continued to look like someone who will have an immediate impact once he's summoned to the big leagues. He was clocked at 101 miles per hour in spring training, overpowering hitters. Barring injury, he'll be in the majors this year. Presumably, it's early, but he'll start the season in the minors.
Win projection.
The Pirates went 76-86 last year, and Pecota has them dropping, finishing last in the National League Central with 71.6 wins. Hembo says 73. Sarah has them at 72. I say they take a step up this year and land on 78. Greg Brown does play-by-play for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And Greg, thanks for doing this. Great to talk with you.
My pleasure, Buster. Great talking with you as well.
All right. So tell me about the hope that Pirates fans are feeling now, because they seem to be more active than they have been in recent years during the offseason.
I think they've seen the build-up, Buster, since Ben Cherington took over baseball operations, and Derek Shelton, Travis Williams, the president, the house cleaning that took place after the 2019 year, then the COVID year hit. It was painful, the rebuild. It was obvious it was going to happen. Ben Cherington's task was basically to try and replenish a depleted minor league system. And as you know, that takes time. And now we're starting to see the fruits of his labor. We started to see it really the last couple of years, the arrival of some of these prospects highlighted by O'Neill Cruz and others. And in addition to that, Ben has made it a point to lock up some of the cornerstones to long-term deals once he and the baseball ops decided that they could come to terms and it would be worth their while, worth the Pirates' while, to keep them, knowing that they'd be part of a championship caliber club. So it started 3 years ago when they extended Key Brian Hayes. Last year, it was Brian Reynolds. This year, Mitch Keller. And I think that combination, plus people started to see now the young players arriving, the improvement from last year, 14-game improvement from the previous year, the pitching that's come along, and then some additions out of the bullpen, Aroldis Chapman, $10.5 million for 1 year to set up David Bednar, some other guys that came on board, Rowdy Tellez to anchor down first base, the arrival of Henry Davis. It's been an incredible story this spring. It's just, I think Pirate fans are pretty savvy, Buster. You really can't fool them. And so it makes it tough on a broadcaster to try and sugarcoat anything. You really can't. They're very aware of where the team was, where it is, and where it's going. And I think there are a lot of Pirate fans that see in real time that this club is making vast improvements and has a shot at doing something this year.
Especially within the context of the National League Central, where it doesn't look like there's going to be a dominant team. Like, you could make an argument if X, Y, and Z go right for every team in this division. Hey, you know, maybe they could be wind up being the top or team near the top. Tell me about what you're seeing in O'Neill Cruz this spring and the progress you're seeing in what he's trying to do.
It's really been kind of miraculous. We've talked about this on the air, that a guy, for all intents and purposes, has not played competitive baseball since April 9th last year. Missed a whole year, not do anything competitively, to my knowledge, in winter ball team-wise, and then come into spring training and act like he's been in the league for 10 years. At this moment, I think he's tied for the major league lead in homers. He hit two home runs in Clearwater, but I think one might be still bouncing on Route 19. He's got exit velos, Buster, this year of his seven home runs of 111, 112, two at 105, 114, 115, 117. I mean, he was the king of exit velos before he got hurt. And now I think he wants to regain that crown. It's just crazy what he is doing. And maybe as importantly, because I don't think the Pirates want to move him, but he's looking really good at shortstop. And we've seen him run the bases. He's one of the fastest players in baseball. And so there's no sign of that devastating injury that took place April 9th last year and cost him an entire year. So fingers are crossed that he continues to stay healthy. He continues to grow. Rowdy Tellez said he's never seen anything like it. I can't describe it. There are no words. And he's a generational talent. He said, I'm just glad I'm now on his team and I don't have to watch it from the other side of the dugout.
Tell me about Suwinski and what you've seen in him.
Continues to grow. He's a cerebral guy. It's an interesting move, by the way. They just signed Michael A. Taylor, Gold Glove center fielder. So now Derek Shelton's going to move Suwinski out of center and probably most nights to left field, where it's often been said at PNC Park, you really need two center fielders anyway because of that spacious outfield. And then Brian Reynolds will flip over to right. But Suwinski, you know, he studies the game. He's very well aware that all he has to do, I put all in air quotes, he has to do is cut down on those strikeouts. If he does, you know, he's a 35-plus home run guy. Even with all the strikeouts, I think he had 27 last year. And in less than two full years, he's put together, if you look at the history of the power hitters in the Pirates organization, maybe the best less than 2 years aside this side of Ralph Kiner than anybody's put in Pirates history.
Wow.
So he's got tremendous power from the left side. And I was talking about this the other day, Buster, to somebody. Just watching, this is even before the game started, I was watching batting practice at Leacom, the former McKechnie, now called Leacom, in Bradenton, where the Pirates play. and watching player after player, just batting practice, but hit bombs out of that ballpark. And it occurred to me that, and I've been doing this a long time, I don't remember a Pirates team, even in batting practice, having that many players get up there and hit balls out of the ballpark. I remember Bill Mazeroski many years ago. He's a guest instructor. He was out in the outfield shagging. And he kind of kiddingly said, how come I always have to do all this work out here when we bat and actually make some catch the play? The other team bats and they don't have to shag because the balls are all leaving the ballpark. and really, there's some truth to that. And now the Pirates have potential for 30 home run guys. I stress potential because people think I get hyperbolic, and I'm not, I'm just saying potentially 30 home run guys out. And this is not crazy talk. Sawinski, Rowdy Tellez at 35 2 years ago. You know what O'Neill Cruz can do. Brian Reynolds hit 2 years ago, I think 27. Key Brian Hayes, the 2 months he put together last year, and he leads everybody in baseball in exit velocity this spring, by the way. Henry Davis, I'm not going to say it's going to happen this year, but he certainly has the potential. They've got a bunch of guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark this year and in coming years, and it's really exciting.
Fill in the blank. The Pirates will contend for the National League Central if
O'Neill Cruz stays healthy and the pitching staff stays healthy. If they can also, I guess I'll add another one, Buster, since you didn't limit me to this. Not a one-word answer, didn't have to be. If the Pirates can just hold their head above water for a couple months, just hold their heads up until Skeens gets ready. I don't know how long it's going to take. It shouldn't take long. We've seen Paul Skeens. He's a man amongst boys. He is crazy good. There are some other – they've got – Charrington's put together some depth in this organization. Some guys that don't make this club out of spring training are going to start providing that depth at AAA. Jared Jones might make the team. His stuff is off the charts. Quinn Priester starting to look like the guy they were talking about. Anthony Solomito is a guy that is going to be in the big leagues before too long. They've got some veterans. I don't know if Chase Anderson makes the club, but Eric Lauer. And of course, Domingo Herman, it's not going to take him long to, I would think maybe a couple weeks. I don't know, but just to build up and get his arm ready to start in the rotation. That's going to be a decent rotation, and it's going to get better with reinforcements along the way. And they're going to be guys in the minor leagues pushing. If Nick Gonzalez doesn't make the club, if Leo Vera-Pagero doesn't make the club, they're going to be pushing second base. And there are others through that pipeline. And before too long, not this year, I don't think, but boy, before too long, Tamar Johnson's knocking at the door. Charrington's done a remarkable job in a short amount of time doing exactly what his mission was, and that, again, was to replenish the system from top to bottom.
So my guess is that Skeens gets to the big leagues when he shows a period of dominance in the minors, the beginning of the year. And I don't know whether that they're going to say that's four starts, five starts, but I feel like he's going to be up, especially if they get off to a decent start. What do you think?
I don't think, just my guess, that what happens at the big league level will determine what they do with Skeens. I think they're just going to make sure that they are absolutely positive that Skeens is ready. Okay. And it should take long. You know, as you know, he was pitching one every Friday night. He was pitching four. So now this routine, they want him to get into this new routine, pitching every 5 days and what that's going to be like. But it shouldn't take long. I think he's going to dominate from what, and I rely on people like you and others to tell me about what good a prospect he was. And from what I'm hearing, he's as good a college prospect as there's been since Strasburg, maybe better, from a lot of the scouts and others that I've talked to. And with that in mind, then it should not take that long before he is ready to step into that role. But I don't think they're going to they're not going to rush him. I don't think they're going to hold him back. I think everyone will know when he is good and ready to join that rotation.
Exciting days for the Pirates this summer. I'm looking forward to it. Greg, thanks for doing this.
Great talking to you, Buster. Thanks for having me on.
Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN. Get great deals on the hottest tickets. Experience it live.
Bleacher Tweets.
Got another day of Bleacher tweets for you all. And our first one comes from PK Steinberg.
PK!
He wants to know, Buster, what's your favorite number and who are some of your favorite and or not so favorite players to wear it?
Oh, my favorite number is number 3, which actually was inspired by Bud Harrelson, the shortstop for the Mets when I was in Little League. We had a team that was basically an expansion team when I was 11 years old. And because we were the Mets, called the Mets, and I was a shortstop, I wanted Bud Harrelson's number. He was my favorite player, number 3.
All right. And here's our next message from Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris, a lifelong Yankee fan from New York, currently living in Canada. And my question is, when is baseball going to address the fact that they are so thoroughly encouraging non-competitive behavior with the way the salary cap is set up, or the luxury tax for that matter? Blake Snell, one of the best pitchers in the NL, just got a 2-year deal. That's insane. And there are a multitude of teams that would sign him if they didn't have to pay salary cap ramifications, among them my Yankees. So do you think this is something that they can address in the next collective bargaining agreement? Or just in general, is there a way to force the smaller teams to actually spend to a lower limit, a floor? Because it seems like it's just tremendously unfair to the players. Thank you very much. I can't wait to hear if you answer this. Great. Thanks. Bye.
So in the last CBA talks, the owners actually brought up the idea of a salary cap, and it was rejected outright by the players. With this, for lack of a better way to describe it, this coup that's happened with players asking for change in the leadership of the union with this conference call that happened on Monday night, my first thought was that this might be a crack in that stance that the union has long had. And I expect that the next round of negotiations, they will explore the idea more thoroughly. In other words, it might be that they decide that they're not going to adopt a salary cap. But I think that this time around, they're going to explore it. And if in the end, the rank and file among the players get more money, and in essentially trading that to the owners for cost certainty, which is what is behind a salary cap desire among the owners, I wonder if it's going to be adopted. There's no question. We saw the leadership was out of step with the rank and file when the last CBA was agreed to. If you remember, the player representatives voted against approving the deal, and the players across the board overwhelmingly voted for the deal. So it tells you that the sentiment among the players is very different than what the sentiment among the leadership is. And look, I do think baseball would benefit from a more collaborative relationship between the union and Major League Baseball. It doesn't mean they have to give in. It just means that, you know, they have more conversations, swap more ideas, and they work together to try to grow the sport.
Here's the next one, Buster, from Andrew.
Hey, Buster. My name is Andrew. I'm from New Jersey. Love the show. I'm a big Texas Rangers fan, and I have a question about the Houston Astros. And I hope this doesn't sound bitter, but I see the Astros being placed in front of the Rangers in a lot of projections and things of that nature. Obviously, they have kept most of their core team, but I wonder if you think losing Dusty Baker will have a big effect on their chances this year. That's no knock at Joe Espada. He's been with them for over 5 years now. I just wonder, with how much Dusty did for them, if they might take a step back, or more of a step back than people think, in his absence. Love the show. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for the kind words. Look, I do think that potentially this could be a factor. Now, they do have a lot of veterans, you know, the likes of Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve and Justin Verlander. But something about Dusty, first off, his team's always played hard for him, and I'm sure that they will for Joe Espada. But he, I think in his time with the Astros, was much better at fostering elite pitching. He fought for Martin Maldonado to be the catcher there, and the pitchers responded. They're going with a younger catcher now. I do wonder if between age and injuries and the concerns about the catcher and his development in terms of handling pitchers, if you're going to see a big step backward with the Houston pitching staff, and that's going to be related to some degree to Dusty Baker.
That wraps up our Bleacher Tweets for today. If you want to leave Buster a voice message, be sure to call us at 406-404-8460 or mention/@Buster on Twitter and #BleacherTweets.
That's it for today. My thanks to Dan Schulman, to Greg Brown, to Paul Hembakides, and to Carl Ravitch, Sean Bartley working from California. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day. We got game two tomorrow.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.